This is an ABC podcast.
It all leads back to education and awareness. How much of HIV are we prioritizing this in the communities? And you know, a big part that would play and help in this is if this education is brought into the school system.
One thing that is really, really common with women and girls is self-stigma, the feeling of shame, self-guilt, blaming themselves that they have made themselves HIV positive.
It would be very difficult for people who inject drugs to argue that they can and should and must be part of the solution for AIDS, and it's not viewed simply as part of the problem.
HIV is no longer the epidemic feared globally in the 1980s and 90s. Thanks to advances in medications, people can now live a long life with HIV, and infections have been declining globally. But in Fiji, HIV infections are rapidly rising. Why? I'm Hilda Wayne. Sisters, let's talk about HIV in Fiji. Earlier this year, we looked at how HIV is impacting women and girls in the Pacific, how they are most likely to be infected, their access to treatment, and the stigma they face. We learned that a lot has changed for the better with access to counseling and treatment services being made available. Living with HIV is not the death sentence it used to be, and for some, that can mean that families and communities are more supportive than fearful. Rebecca was diagnosed in 2006 when her fourth child was born. She participated in voluntary confidential counseling and testing or VCCT.
It was something that was very new in the antenatal clinics. And so we went through the process of VCCT, and having been advised of what all would happen and take place during VCCT, I was very confident, and I did agree to have a HIV test.
Being a new program, the testing process was still somewhat slow, and Rebecca didn't learn of her HIV-positive status until after her daughter was born. However, the same woman who tested her in the antenatal clinic gave her the news and became her counselor.
She called me up on the day. It was all a very confidential process. It was all very new here in Motoka then, and so I was advised of my status, and through this one particular counselor that I went through the whole process with, you know, I overcame so much, especially with back in the days when HIV was all about death, all about fear. Through also the help of my counselor, I actually, you know, managed to disclose some of my family members on the very same day that I was diagnosed.
30 years ago, that might have been a much more frightening prospect, facing the diagnosis and telling family about it on the same day. But when Rebecca told her mom and her older sister, they were supportive.
You know, there was fear present, but they were also very emotional. However, very receptive. And my mom, who was one of the two I disclosed to, besides, along with my elder sister, the eldest in our family, they were very, very supportive. And because my mom, I come from a very strong, staunch Catholic family. So, you know, the power of prayer really, really helped us. It kind of prepared us well into that moment, you know, the unexpected, and it came along, and the reception was very great, you know, even though it was good that there was a lot of questions asked. And we took a lot of precautionary measures, especially around our children, and that along at the same time, you know, always filling in information with the help of the counselor.
At first, Rebecca's mother didn't want anyone else to know about the diagnosis.
That was just the kind of person she was. However, there came a time when my brother-in-law got to find out from my sister, because he walked in on her praying and crying, and, you know, he just wanted to know why she was crying in the middle of the day. Then my sister, you know, could not hide it anymore from her husband, and she advised the husband, and my brother-in-law said, you know, this is not something we hide. We talk about it as a family. We help each other. So, like I said, because of the staunch faith and, you know, the love and support the family had for each other, even before that, it never changed. So that definitely built and helped the family, helped me, and then later on to my children in letting them know of my status. It even helped me manage to confront my husband about it in the end. It was a peaceful confrontation, but it was just a one-off.
Being diagnosed with HIV led to many changes in her life, but some of those were positive ones. The daughter she was carrying when she was first tested was not infected, and Rebecca went on to have a fifth child who was also born without the virus. It also changed her confidence and her self-belief as she became an advocate for people living with HIV.
There were at times when I'd be confronted with people about my status, and so it had to make me be able to stand up to those kind of confrontations. None that was very harsh, but it built me up to become a stronger woman, a more vocal person. My life has totally changed a lot. I have also been part of a group of us here, people living with HIV in Fiji, who have become the voice for people living with HIV, and which has helped us, you know, speak out for so many things in terms of treatment, in terms of stigma and discrimination, in terms of, you know, the HIV policy. We've also sat in all these platforms to ensure that our voices as people living with HIV are heard, and that we are also considered in all these platforms. So there has been a big change in my life. And also a very, very great achievement that I would say that has come out of this for me is that having been someone who survived through all this ordeal with the great help of counseling, as of last year, I have graduated and received my diploma in counseling. So now I am a counselor by profession and currently I'm doing voluntary work as well with one of the NGOs here in Fiji.
But while it is now possible to live with HIV, Rebecca says there are still many challenges that people living with the virus have to face.
Accessibility could still be an issue, especially for our peers who live in the rural area. You know, them accessing these services, ensuring confidentiality is maintained, and ensuring that, you know, the availability of treatment is another issue that I would say that we are currently, you know, fighting for and voicing out our opinions on as we speak. Maybe it's because of COVID that there has been some shortages of treatment for us here in Fiji. However, HIV is, for me personally, it's not a health issue that used to be at one time a priority. However, I strongly feel that it still needs to be on the agenda, as, you know, most people think that HIV is no longer in existence. They still need to be continuously reminded that HIV still remains, because the numbers still continue to increase every year, especially in the younger age groups. And so, you know, that speaks volume when the numbers continue to increase and it's coming from the younger age group. It is an indication that, you know, there are still a lot that needs, education needs to continue. Because like most of the affected group alone for last year fell in the age category of 20 to 49 years. And also it was identified that there has been an increase, especially in the MSM and the transgenders and IDU that were infected with HIV.
Why do you think this is happening?
My thoughts and views on this would be it all leads back to education and awareness. You know, how much of HIV are we prioritizing this in the communities, especially even in education? And, you know, a big part that would play and help in this is if this education is brought into the school systems to ensure that children are aware of this and teachers need to be trained. Because when you come to speaking of HIV, you're speaking of, you're talking about sex, you're talking about they need to be comfortable, they need to be confident when they're speaking about all of this, especially to children. Because as much as we'd like to think and believe that our children are very small, our children know a lot more than they are supposed to know. And so, you know, like they need to be able to be open. And for us here in Fiji, one of the biggest barriers is because of the traditions and the cultures and all that. That has a big hold and barrier on communicating, not only for teachers, but for homes even. You know, you will find it very, very rarely that you walk into a home where there is talks of sex education, of self-awareness on the child between the parent and the children. That is a rare thing to happen. But if you actually have that done into the school system, then parents need to be more open-minded to enable the child to come back home. And, you know, have an open conversation about all this. And parents need to also educate themselves on all that is happening around them to be able to continue to converse and communicate with their children about all of this.
One thing that hasn't changed is the level of stigma that women and girls with HIV experience. Why are they still scrutinized so much more than men?
For me personally, the fact that women are always seen as the weaker ones, for us here, culture and tradition plays a big part in all of this. And that also leads to women always being very quiet and very reserved, rather, especially when it comes to a lot that happens around them. And then without realizing that, you know, like, no, what you are doing to me is wrong. I used to think what was happening to me was okay. You know, women not only need to be provided with awareness and educated on HIV, but all these other surrounding issues that lead up to this, gender-based violence and all this information women need to receive and access.
Rebecca is a strong advocate for women and girls living with HIV. And I hope if you or someone you know is suffering in silence, that she inspires you to seek out support.
This is Sisters Let's Talk with Hilda Wayne.
Despite the available services, awareness and treatment, the rate of HIV infections in Fiji increased by 129% in the last decade. And the 2022 Global AIDS Monitoring Report revealed AIDS-related deaths in Fiji had increased by 173%. So what's going on? Dr. Renata Ram is the UNAIDS Country Director for Fiji.
When you have the increase of mobile technology, this can be a very dangerous place for young, curious people who are accessing the internet to learn about sexual health. And the lack of comprehensive sexuality education is really problematic here. And, you know, with the current approach to sexual education in Fiji, it's mostly focused on reproductive health education, which largely looks at family planning and is targeted towards women and girls. And this misses out a very key population and a high-risk population. And these are people of diverse sexualities. So the curriculum or the educational needs that's out there does not focus on their practices. And this in turn increases the risk of HIV and STIs to these groups of men who have sex with men, sex workers, and also trans women.
This figure is an estimated figure. Why is that? And could cases be higher or lower than reported?
Okay, so yes, UNAIDS does this modeling exercise every year. And we provide revised global, regional, and country-specific model estimates to track the HIV epidemic using the best available epidemiological and programmatic data. And these modeled estimates are required because, you know, simply it's impossible to count the exact number of people living with HIV, those who are newly affected with HIV, or people who have died from AIDS-related causes in any country. For Fiji in 2020, the range that we have, the lower end of the range is 1,400 people who are estimated to be living with HIV. So this is the lower range, and at the higher estimate, it's up to 2,800 people who are estimated to be living with HIV.
With drug use and sex work, are women able to negotiate safe sex in such situations?
It comes down to the person whether they have the negotiating power to actually do this. In some cases, some female sex workers are really put at a spot, right? Like some of their clients would be willing to pay extra money for condomless sex. So, you know, it depends on how empowered sex workers are in doing this. And if, say, for example, the sex worker is actually an injecting drug user and there's a, you know, addiction has developed and then there's a need for surplus income, the power really weakens there, right, to actually practice safe sex.
As drug use increased in Fiji and also in the Pacific?
Yes, the injecting drug use and generally the use of synthetic drugs has increased in Fiji. And how this is a risk to HIV is that mostly the most common mode of use is through the use of needles intravenously. And in most cases, these needles are shared because purchasing needles in Fiji, especially, is not an easy thing to do. Usually at the pharmacy level, most pharmacists would require you have a prescription for a certain drug to be able to get a clean syringe, which is actually a barrier and quite problematic. So a lot of people would end up sharing these needles in order to engage in these practices. And another issue, which I mentioned earlier, is chemsex, in which people use these drugs for group sex. And in most events, this involves unprotected sex. And with injecting drug use in most countries, there are a series of challenges that exist to properly address HIV among injecting drug use. And the first is that most countries and other countries, drug use is illegal. Therefore, these barriers and the ways that they are controlled fall under the authority of the police. And this is an issue in relation to HIV, as the most effective prevention strategies are those which include the people who are most affected. It would be very difficult for people who inject drugs to argue that they can and should and must be part of the solution for AIDS, and it's not viewed simply as part of the problem, and people are thrown into prison because of this. And also here in Fiji, we don't have proper needle exchange programs, and so this can be quite a considerable challenge to really assist people who use drugs here in Fiji. As for, like, you know, the risk to sex workers, there are multiple factors of risk faced by them. Many of them are injecting drug users, and because of the legality of their line of work, which is illegal in Fiji, access to health services are limited. In addition, many sex workers face stigma and discrimination. So studies have indicated that 60% of female sex workers surveyed in Fiji actually reported avoiding HIV testing due to fear of stigma from healthcare providers. And as a result, these studies also showed that testing amongst female sex workers is as low as 25%.
This is a concern for not only Fiji, but throughout the Pacific, PNG included. What needs to be done to continue to address this epidemic?
There's a greater need for a national and regional action. And firstly, these actions need to strengthen data for better programming purposes. Like, countries really need to know their epidemics. So who are the key population? What exactly are the age groups? What are the behavioral trends? What are the health-seeking behaviors? Having better data enables countries to tailor-make programs for greater impact. And in most Pacific Island countries, these kind of population size estimates or behavioral studies have not been done for over 10 years. The next thing we really need to do to address the epidemic is upscaling community-led programs and through a combination prevention approach. So this includes providing prevention commodities such as condoms, PrEP, testing, and treatment. So a combination package encourages regular testing and stronger attention to treatment as a form of prevention. Thirdly, we really need to improve on communication for empowered, safer choices and really drive a demand creation for health-seeking behavior, for prevention, testing, and treatment. This is something that we know very well, that people are not, the uptake of testing and prevention is quite poor in the Pacific region as a whole. And lastly, we really need to push for an introduction of prevention programs for people who use drugs through harm reduction strategies. And these strategies include a needle exchange program. And this is to mitigate the risk of new infections from sharing of needles, and also PrEP. So PrEP is one of the new game changers of HIV prevention, which is actually a preventative form of antiretroviral drugs, which people can take on a daily basis. So these actions really need stronger support from the international community for resource mobilization, technical assistance, and also for South-South cooperation.
Renata, you made a statement, put out a statement as soon as this report came out, asking for urgent action. What has been the response to your call for action on this?
Well, the response has been very positive. So since the call for action in August, there's been very strong support, especially from our neighbors in Australia and New Zealand. These donor governments have indicated an interest to support national governments to strengthen the national health response. In addition, we have heard from non-governmental organizations based in Australia. So this one is the Australasian Society for Sexual HIV Medicine and Hepatitis. So they're known as ASHAM, and also the National Association of People Living with HIV in Australia, who are currently supporting Fiji with a project for people living with HIV. I believe, there's now a better understanding of the true situation of HIV in Fiji. And while we have the response since August has indicated some support, we are still far off track. But it's great to see that we are in the right direction in getting back on track. And what's even more heartwarming is to see the solidarity from our closest neighbors in helping the Pacific Islands mitigate this problem.
That's Dr. Renata Rum, the UNAIDS Country Director for Fiji. As Renata said, the people most integral to preventing the spread of HIV are those living with the virus. But prevention is tough if stigma continues to stop people from disclosing their diagnosis or even from seeking a test to learn whether or not they have HIV. Jokopathy Kati is the program manager for Future Network, which supports people like her who are living with HIV in Fiji. Earlier this year, I spoke to her about the impact of stigma surrounding HIV.
We conducted a stigma index, people living with HIV stigma index study in the Pacific for 7 countries. And within these 7 countries, we find that external stigma was very low, in the sense that these HIV-positive people are almost invisible groups. None of them has come out public. Expecting is almost impossible because they are not public with their status. People don't even know that they are HIV positive, apart from the medical people. One thing that I find that was really, really common with women and girls is self-stigma. Self-stigma was really high across the board in the Pacific. The feeling of shame, self-guilt, blaming themselves that they have made themselves HIV positive and contributed to a relationship, costing the marriage. There's so much self-stigma as compared to external stigma. Interesting, because I was expecting a more external stigma, but the finding was that self-stigma and felt stigma was really high in the PLH HIV community, particularly women and girls.
How do you address the self-stigma that really affects these women and girls today?
Well, I think that one of the things that has worked globally is peer-to-peer support. So women supporting and empowering, embracing other women's journey, talking about their stories, you know, just a simple Tylenol and dialogue really will empower other women who are in similar situations. So I really feel, and this has been proven in my project, when women empower women and also, you know, other gender, when they do empower their own peers, that really, really helps and boosts the confidence and, you know, help them live a normal life. So it's about education, to take awareness and create education regarding HIV. Basic information. It's also about education on the consequences of stigma and discrimination, how it fuels the epidemic, how it fuels HIV, how it contributes to increase HIV cases rather than decreasing the cases, because people need to understand the result of stigma and discrimination, that it stops access of testing. So, you know, one of the things that I feel that really needs to happen a lot is that women are taking action and women are demonstrating that they support other women. Women need to take ownership of that and prove to the world that we as women, we can support other women in the Pacific and also girls in that sense. So I really feel that we need more action, less speaking, less, you know, words, but we really need more role models, more champions, more women coming out and supporting other women, just so that we can see that, you know, women themselves are acting and behaving and, you know, showing that we can support each other as women. And also as girls, you know, peer-to-peer support. So engaging girls at the same age, trying to empower them and have them being an activist and champion so that they can empower other women. And this empowerment in action, I'm referring to, it needs to be visible, needs to be potent in a way that women can trust that these women who are in front of us are really showing good example. And they really mean what they say when they want to support and embrace other women's journey.
Jo Kapethi, Kati is the program manager for Future Network, which supports people like her who are living with HIV in Fiji. Thanks to all my guests today, Jo Kapethi, Dr. Renata Ram, and Rebecca. These three women are doing incredible work to help reduce stigma and stop the spread of HIV in their country. Thank you so much for joining me, Hilda Wayne, for Sisters Let's Talk on ABC Radio Australia, a weekly show by Pacific Islands Women for Pacific Islands Women, where we get together to talk about the issues that are important to us. If you've missed an episode of the show, catch up on our podcast. In the Pacific, just search for Sisters Let's Talk wherever you get your podcasts. If you're in Australia, you can listen to Sisters Let's Talk on the ABC Listen app. If you've got a topic you'd like me to cover on the show or any feedback, I'd love to hear from you. Send me a message anytime at the ABC Radio Australia Facebook page or email sisters@abc.net.au. Next time on Sisters Let's Talk, meet the Black Sisters, the West Papuan family using traditional Melanesian song and dance to advocate for free West Papua.
My uncle formed this band and they travelled all over West Papua and, you know, they did their shows. They actually settled in Jakarta for a few years where they made a lot of, you know, number one hits, and it started obviously getting political because there was a message behind the music.
That's next time on Sisters Let's Talk. Sisters Let's Talk is presented and produced by me, Hilda Wayne. Our supervising producer is Kim Lester. Executive producer is Inga Stunzner. Sisters Let's Talk is an ABC Radio Australia production. Emtasol na bungim you next time.